All right. Good morning, good people. Good morning. It is Wednesday, March the 27th, 7:18 a.m. Coming to you live from WWDB AM 860 and from Facebook Live. It's Mark and Denise in the mornings. Denise has the day off, so I'm holding it down solo, but don't worry. Got tons of guests. And then there's you, including the Facebook Live conversation, which is always a show in and of itself. Trust me, you've not really enjoyed the show until you've had a day with folk like Sheila and Aunt Regina. I tell you, they keep the show going. Nas, Craig, Dawn, Franny. You miss something when you don't get to spend time with them. They go on to a tangent of their own. I look back and I'm like, how did you all get there? We're talking about one thing, and next thing I know, they're somewhere totally different, trying to keep up. But again, look for them at Facebook Live, and you can post your comments there, and we will be glad to share them as well. See Rochelle Bilal is listening as well this morning, regular listener. Wanda is in the house, sitting in today for a little bit this morning. I'm going to talk to him in just a moment when we lay the show out. But Councilman David O, you know, we're interviewing 41 at-large candidates for city council in Philadelphia in 41 shows. And Councilman O was kind enough to come in this morning at the last minute. But, you know, that's what we fellow radio hosts do for each other.
That's right.
Yeah, we're colleagues in radio. He is the host here at WWDB AM on Tuesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. In the Know with David O. Great name for a show, Councilman.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you for coming in. We're gonna talk about your campaign in just a few moments. But let me just let you know what's on tap today at 8 o'clock. One of your favorites will be calling in, Christopher Flood, the drummer Norris, with his thoughts on justice for Jussie. Jussie Smollett. He's got Rahm Emanuel all upset because he got off yesterday. Community service, $10,000 fine. And Jussie goes back to business as usual, but he's not on Empire anymore. So some people could say He's probably paid more than he thought he would. We'll also speak to Neighbors Against the Gas Plant. You can guess by the name of their group what they're about. They're against a gas plant in their neighborhood. I'm going to talk to them. They'll be in studio. And Hannibal Lacombe, who was scheduled yesterday, but had a long trip driving into Philly the night before. We did speak after the show, so we expect him today. Again, he's got a great event with the Philadelphia Orchestra. He is the composer in residence with the Philadelphia Orchestra. He's got a new piece called Healing Tones. And wow, man, in this country, we need something like that right now. It'll be at the Kimmel Center Thursday through Saturday. He'll talk about it, and you can also learn about ways that you can attend. If you've never heard Hannibal, I'm telling you, incredible trumpeter and an amazing composer. If you want to get in on any of this today, give us a call, 888-329-3306, 888-329-3306. Council member David O., what's going on?
Oh, I can't say too much. I got a text message or email from you at like 10:15 last night.
Desperate.
Yes, and I think I responded like 1:50 in the morning or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, listen. We appreciate you coming in, and so again, this is the eighth show. Mm. So every day, people have had a chance to get to know one of you that's running for office. You are an incumbent. You're already
yes,
in.
Yes,
you're,
I am.
You're on the Republican side. There are two Republican or two non-Democratic seats. You hold
yes.
one of them.
Yes.
So let's talk about your last 4 years. What have you been up to? Any legislation passed? What's happened in office?
Well, you know, the last 4 years, I think I have really kind of learned more about what happens in council, and that's one mm-hmm. of the things I have to say is that when I ran for council, it was aspirational, of course, mm-hmm. and challenging, trying to be cooperative and positive. But once you get there, and there's no instruction book, there's no instruction book on how to be a council person, you have to learn everything. And some things are easy. You can find the men's room, for example. You'll eventually do that. but how things actually work, what the budget actually represents, mm-hmm. where the money is, you know, that type of thing takes a while. And so I think in my second term, I was more knowledgeable about what was actually going on that I had not really seen before. And so during the second term, I really began to focus on what was happening to people in our city. And so I would say the second term, I was looking at how to solve problems by taking on some challenging political status quo. Mm-hmm. One of them, for example, I'll say, and I think people know this, is that I have challenged the city's relationship to the parking authority. Mm. And the reason I do that is because when I look at the parking authority and what it does, it basically is an authority that was created through state law, but the city did it.
Right.
And eventually provided to it the authority to enforce on-street parking, which is about $135 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, the parking authority was taken over by the state. And at the time, I thought that was proper, you know, under state mm-hmm. law. But since then, I have looked at the law, looked at the Constitution, and I now am very clear that it was an unconstitutional takeover. And whatever the legal status of it was at the time, it certainly no longer has a viable legal status because the parking authority was taken over, according to the state, to fund the school district.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't done that. And quite frankly, the school district has been returned to the city.
Right.
And so I introduced a bill to return on-street parking, the control of on-street parking, to the city of Philadelphia. Now, what that actually means is we used to have a contract with the parking authority, and now we don't. It was just legislated that the parking authority would enforce on-street parking without the city. And so the revenues go to the state first, and then they come to us. But what I'm saying is that the revenue should come to the city first.
Mm-hmm.
And we can negotiate with the parking authority, which is designed and has been built up over the years to enforce parking regulations, but they have to respond to the citizens of Philadelphia, and the revenues have to come to the city and the schools. So that's one of the things, for example, that I've done, calling for an audit and eventually introducing a bill to take back the enforcement of the parking authority.
So the parking authority has been a big issue, and a lot of people are critical of the current state of affairs. So I would imagine that on city council, it must be unanimous that people are supporting this. Is that right?
So absolutely not. And that's
really
that's the interesting part. If you look at YouTube videos, you'll see that when I first introduced a resolution to audit the parking authority, it was tabled very quickly with an aye vote and no request for nay votes. Mm-hmm. I did it about three times. It never actually passed. And then I introduced a bill to take back control of the parking authority. I think that is one of the things that I would have not have imagined. I would have not have thought that would happen in my first 4 years.
Well, so help me now.
Yeah.
Because you would imagine that you being a Republican in a Democrat, I mean, you're like the super, super, super minority, like two Republicans.
Right, right.
And the rest are Democrats.
Well, three actually.
Oh, three.
Two at large, one district, and
okay,
then
that's right.
14 Democrats. Yeah.
All right. So it's not like, you know, you can do anything legislatively without Democratic support.
Very true.
I would imagine that, you know, it would be Democrats who are saying, let's take the parking authority back from the state and give it back to local control. And Republicans would be saying, no, leave it in the state hands because you can't trust these corrupt Democrats in the city. I'm just kind of baffled.
Well, I think that's, you know, I think that's the thing that we're talking about is being an informed voter.
Yeah.
And not just really judging every book by its cover.
Yeah.
Or just making assumptions. So at the end of the day, there are Republicans and Democrats on council that come together in a bipartisan fashion in what I would say is, you know, pursuing the public interest.
Right.
And of course, there's differences of opinions. And so in all fairness, you know, I may have an idea about what's fair and just, and someone may fight that vehemently, but it's not because they're not for, you know, doing the right thing. Their opinion is just different. But then there are certain things that just appear to be not really debatable. And so I think the parking authority is one. I think another issue that we are having, and it's just a kind of a long continuous debate and argument that we've had, is the property taxes. Listen, I mean, since I've been on council after the implementation, and we were required to do it, we were required by state law before it was taken over by the state, we were required to implement AVI, you know, the actual value initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was supposed to happen, we were told, is there would be an adjustment of the property taxes, and then there'd be a couple of maybe spikes here and there, and it would even out, and then it would be stable. But instead, during my time on council in the last 4 years, every year there is an increase. It's not even, it's not uniform, and we don't understand how it works because it's not transparent. And we have, challenged the administration each year to give us the formula, show us how this works, to answer the questions. And what we've gotten back is it's accurate. We can stand by it. And then next year, it's more accurate than last year, but it's higher. And then next year, it's higher. And it's more, but when you look at it, it's not even. And the problem with that is you can go onto a block of identical houses, identical real estate, and find that the land and the houses are assessed so very differently. But what you will find in terms of a pattern is that you go into poor areas that are hot property areas, and the property taxes are driving people out of their homes.
Well, I've got members of my church who have that testimony, who have been in neighborhoods for decades, and now all of a sudden, literally, so they, you know, they retired, they have their life set up just right.
Fixed income.
They know exactly what they need. Everything was good. All of a sudden, Northern Liberties flips, and they're thinking, I might not be able to live here until I die, like I planned.
So one of the problems is that people have been told, well, that's because Philadelphia is developing. Well, that's not true. That's not accurate. It is true to some extent, but you know, this is the problem. A person has a home that each year is deteriorating a little bit more.
Yep.
And when their house, let's say it's assessed to their understanding at $160,000, eventually it's assessed at $350,000, but nobody will give them $350,000 for that house. And that is the problem. The house itself is not valued that way. It shouldn't be assessed that way. What is happening is that the assessment process is improper and illegal, and therefore the taxes that they're getting are improper. So I have called for, in my bill, an ability of counsel to hire a third-party auditor, an independent auditor of good repute, to look at the assessment process. That did not pass, but what did pass, or actually what was done, was council hired a third-party, independent third-party auditor who only looked at this year's assessments and determined them to be below standard, which means that all the it's the methodology. They don't go through house by house. They go through the methodology, and so the methodology is incorrect, and therefore I introduced a bill that says because the methodology is incorrect, you cannot collect the taxes that based on these assessments, and you have to reject the 2019 assessments and go back to the 2018. We were in the midst of voting on that, and we abruptly lost our quorum, and so I have to try to get the hearing relisted so we can vote on it.
Well, let me ask. Again, this is the benefit of speaking to somebody who's in council, has been in now for a while, because you, as opposed to kind of the aspirational things of what you want to do, you now see the process of how it gets done. So let's talk a little bit about another hot issue that kept coming up on Sunday at the candidates forum, the tax abatement.
Yes.
So where are you with regard to the 10-year tax abatement? Should it stay as it is? Should it be amended? Should it be abolished? What do you think?
Well, I should. I believe it should be amended or abolished. I mean, what has happened is the 10-year tax abatement has served its purpose. Unfortunately, as we were just talking, what has happened is people's homes who have not – they've not risen in value – but the assessments have been used in a way that say, oh, look, the house next to you has – that's worth $600,000, so your house must be worth double or triple. That's actually improper. That is not supposed to happen under state law. And now that there has been all this development, what that tax abatement was really for, what it really is for, is to encourage investment and development in poor neighborhoods. And so what I would say is if we can address the improper way we're assessing people's homes, then we can amend it. If we cannot deal with the assessment, we should abolish it, because it would be a good tool for improving homes in poor neighborhoods, because all of these homes are they were not built well, most of them in the city. Some of them were built very well, but most of them were not. And so they need a lot of work. And so we don't want to have people improve their homes and have to pay a large tax on it. But what is happening is people are so frightened now because of the assessments and the increasing taxes and people not being able to stay in their homes that, you know, people do not want the abatement even in poor neighborhoods.
All right. So let's stick with taxes.
Yep.
One of my favorites. I'm sorry, Denise is not here so that we can't get into one of our famous debates.
Arguments there. Okay.
Yeah. About the beverage tax. So I won't even go into my thoughts about it. But so, you know, how is it working out?
Well, you know, it depends on who you ask. To me, it's not working out, and I'll give my kind of historical perspective. When the soda tax or beverage tax was introduced and voted on, I showed through charts that the amount of money that the administration was seeking in order to fund pre-K at the time, universal pre-K, was already in the budget, and therefore there was not a need for a beverage tax. The issue that I think gets confused is, well, we don't want people to drink soda. okay, if you don't want people to drink soda, that's one issue. Mm-hmm. If you're going to tax them on drinking beverages, that's another issue.
Right.
Should poor people be taxed to provide for services when we already have the money from a more fair and universal tax? So I think the argument is really not about the beverage tax. It's about whether or not we're going to continue to fund and improve pre-K, K through 4, 4 through 12, and colleges like community college, so that when our young people graduate from high school, that they can go on to get two-year degrees or four-year degrees at an affordable price. And I think that goes beyond the soda tax. As long as the money is there for these programs that people support, why do we have to argue about the soda tax?
Right.
At the end of the day, the soda tax has cost jobs. At the end of the day, we all understand that people who can buy their sodas do it outside the city of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And those who don't have to worry about the cost of soda because they're wealthy enough, that's not a problem. The soda tax falls heavily upon the poor and those who have less mobility and who live more day-to-day, you know, for their gratifications. That means they're not thinking about next week. They're thinking about today and tomorrow.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, this is the poorest big city in the country.
Yes.
And when the soda tax hit me, let me tell you, I tell the story all the time. I went to the shop right near us, and we had some people visiting because we don't really buy, you know, sugary drinks for our house.
Right.
And so, and my son was in town. He runs track, so he wanted, like, you know, Gatorade-type drinks.
Right.
And got some, you know, a couple of 24-packs of soda for people who were coming over. And so the young lady at the counter said, wait a minute, you don't want to do it that way. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, no, let me help you. Take that back and then get it this. I mean, she's like schooling me on how, and I'm thinking, why? She said, let me just show you. She rung it up and said, this is what it's going to cost if you buy it this way. I was like, good God, it was like $7 or $8 in taxes.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you serious?
Right.
She said, yes, I'm trying to help you. And I said, okay, it's fine for me, but if you are working and making $7.25 an hour, and it takes you, as we heard on Sunday night at the forum, 110 hours a week at $7.25 an hour just to keep a roof over your head, you don't have an extra $7 for taxes. That is falling on the poor.
Yeah, and I would say this. Listen, I mean, there is a story about government.
Yeah.
Government that helps people, and it's a good story, and I believe in that story too. But let's go back a bit and let's talk about bad government, the government of slavery, the government of discrimination, the government that didn't allow people to testify in their defense. Listen, government can do good and government can do bad, and unchecked government tends to do bad, especially when it is run by a small group of people for their interests, whoever they are. One of the problems with the soda tax is it is a select item, and if we had a choice, you and I, maybe we might select another item.
Right.
Maybe I would choose to tax wine. Maybe someone wants sugary drinks. Maybe someone wants to tax ice cream. There are lobbies defending those, and so it typically happens that the items that are least able to be defended, and I'm not talking about the soda industry. I'm talking about the people.
Mm-hmm.
They're unable to defend themselves, just like these property taxes or other things that the government does. They become susceptible to that. And that's one of the issues that I think is very important in how we fund our government. Do we take money from the poor to give a portion back to the poor? And then as they're losing their houses, we take some more money to give them a loan to fix their house. Stay in her house.
Well, so here's my question. And so, all right, so you and I agree that soda tax should go, but you're going to have to find funding somewhere. So what about, my last question for you, what about pilots? That has come up repeatedly, payments in lieu of taxes, especially on big places like University of Pennsylvania, Drexel, Temple, et cetera.
So pilots is not really a viable option. Because what happened is when Rendell did it, he was basically saying, I could tax you. And so let's come to this point. You make these payments in lieu of taxes. But then the state legislature responded by amending the law and because there was a court case. And so when they amended the law, they took away that threat. And so pilots is not a really viable option because those type of taxes are controlled by the state law, which has a uniformity clause. However, again, the parking authority and other types of revenues that already and should be given to the city are there for us to collect.
All right. Well, Councilman David O, that's all the time we have. I want to thank you and for making sure we didn't break our streak of getting candidate at large council persons in. And you'll be surprised. I know because of the criticism I get in emails after the show, we do have some Republican listeners from Philly.
Yes, yes.
So,
all right.
So you're speaking to some of your voters.
Okay.
And listen, you can hear him as well on Tuesdays here at WWDB AM 860. It's 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. In the Know with David O. You got a jingle for your show yet?
No. I haven't gotten that in advance yet.
You got to get a jingle. I mean, with a title like that, that's pretty easy. Somebody can hook that up.
Hey.
Talk to Nick Taliaferro.
It's a new task.
All right. There you go. All right. Thanks, Councilman. Have a good day in council today.
All right. You too. Take care.
All right, folks. That's council member. They changed the language. Let me be correct. I don't want somebody like jumping on me. Council member David O. And I'm sitting here thinking, so I had my Dunkin' Donuts coffee this morning, and I had extra cream and sugar. Should I be taxed? Why didn't I get taxed? Why don't you get taxed per scoop of sugar at Starbucks or at your favorite coffee place, your little local neighborhood coffee store, OCF, or wherever you go, Federal Donuts, wherever you get your coffee? Why don't you get taxed too? I mean, think about this. We're going to tax sugar. It's all about the sugar. That's crazy. It was easy because, you know, again, the poorest folk can't fight back. Nobody wants to take on the big dogs, you know, Penn, Drexel, whatever. But thanks, Councilman O, for coming in. Always appreciate you. He's a different kind of Republican. Hey, Emmanuel Bussey's not listening yet, I don't think. Not on Facebook Live. He may be listening in the car. You need a new hashtag. Emmanuel Bussey's a different kind of Democrat. Need to do a hashtag for Councilman O. Karen Gold, I don't need sugar in my coffee. So says you. So says you. She's one of my members, Dan, Captain Dan. She's trying to look out for me. You're probably right, Karen. Denise is on Facebook. I didn't get taxed because the tax is on pre-added sugar, not the sugar you add yourself. That didn't fall from heaven. Somebody made that up. It's like, oh, we'll only tax the sugar that goes in before it gets to Philly. But if you put it in yourself, it's all good. No, it's ridiculous. Let's just let it go. Let's move on to something else. Let's find another way. I like what he said. Look, you know, there is money on the table, $135 million on street parking that's getting siphoned out of this city to God knows where. To an agency that's always in the paper for the wrong things. I'm like, good Lord, they can't treat their employees right. Stop having all kind of like sexual harassment cases. How can you trust them with the money? Karen, asked my doctor. I know, Karen. Leave me alone, please. Now I'm going to hear this. Here's the irony, Dan. This is an aside. Karen's jumping on me about the sugar, one of my members. You know those really good cookies I brought in? Guess who gave them to me? Karen. You give me cookies, then you jump on me about sugar.
What?
Yes. What did DMX say? What?
What?
Thank you, DMX. Oh, people, we're going to be talking to Flood the Drummer in about 15 minutes. Christopher Flood the Drummer, Norris. He's going to break down his take on Jussie, not Jesse, Jussie, Jussie Smollett. He's out, Kier Bradford Gray. Justice for Jussie. Hey, you got that clip I sent you, Dan? The justice clip, free all the political prisoners, free Huey, Free Angela. Free Mamiya. Free Jussie. Free R. Kelly. Yeah, you can play a little bit of it now. Free the political prisoners. Free Bill Cosby. Free them all. Meek Mill.
Free all political prisoners.
Yep.
Free all political.
Let Jussie out. Free all. Because after all, he's only arrested because, you know, he's so conscious and woke. Because he's out there fighting for the people. That's why he allegedly hired a couple of Nigerians to dress up like Trump supporters and beat him up. Because he's gay and black. Political prisoners. Yeah. I hear you, Jussie, but Flood's going to break that down for us. And before Flood gets in, there are some stories that I would like to talk about. We only have a few minutes, so I don't know how much of this we'll get through. This is news that you can actually use. If you're in Philadelphia and you have gone to the dentist recently and you go to, I don't know how you pronounce this, TRIEU, Family Dental Clinics, True? Is that true? I'm not sure. Looks like it might be French, Spanish, I don't know. TRIEU? If you've been there, go get checked out. A, you might not want to go back for a while. The health department has closed down three of their clinics, and they are recommending that people get tested. Man, this is scary stuff. For hepatitis and HIV. So I don't know what they were or were not doing in that place. But if you're in Philadelphia and you are someone that you know has used one of the three clinics, I'm not sure if they have more offices, but three have been closed, and it's in philly.com. TRIEU, Family Dental Clinics. They've been closed by the health department, and they are saying to people that while there is a small chance that something could have happened, better safe than sorry. So go and see your doctor. Yikes. That is like really, really scary. In Norfolk, Virginia, this is a story that has caught the attention of folk around the country. And it's one that a lot of people are talking about right now. And I'm hoping that we can get someone on by the end of the week from Norfolk who can break this down. For those of you who've been following police reform and issues related to it, this is one that you will certainly be interested in. The chief of police, African-American woman, has resigned, Tanya Chapman. And she released a statement saying that she was forced to resign because she was attempting to change the department's culture of bias and systemic racism. Gasp. Bias? Systemic racism? In the police department? In.
That's an unrighteous act.
Gino to DMX, back to Gino. Yes. Forced to resign, she says, because she tried to change the department's culture of bias and systemic racism. It's just Portsmouth, Virginia, which is ironically right around the corner from Hampton, Virginia, which is the site of the first enslaved Africans arriving 400 years ago this August. That was 400 years ago. Why would Hampton and Portsmouth and Virginia have racism? I mean, they got a wonderful governor, remember? Great attorney general. We've not forgotten. She said, here, let me just cite a part of what she wrote. She says, quote, having been a member of two other law enforcement agencies, I have never witnessed the degree of bias and acts of systemic racism, discriminatory practices, and abuse of authority in all of my almost 30-year career in law enforcement and public safety. Story goes on. She writes this. This is after a former officer had been convicted of shooting a young black man. She wrote, quote, "Internal strife to include racial tensions within the police department became blatantly apparent to me. Some, quite frankly, did not like taking direction from an African-American female." Heck, Commissioner Chapman, if they didn't want a white woman as president, sure don't want a black woman as chief of police. I mean, come on, you're at the crossroads. you got a 2-for-1, misogyny and racism. Come on, are you kidding me? And you don't want to toe the line? You don't want to cover up for blue acting wrong? Come on, it's blue over black. Isn't that what they say? Blue before black, whatever, however they say it. She says, "I assure you I did not quit on the citizens of Portsmouth. My mother did not raise me to be a quitter." So I got to believe that you're going to hear a lot more from her. Let me just say that, again, I continue my criticism about where we are in the state of policing is this, that we need more people like Commissioner Chapman who are honest. I mean, look, we're human. So, we're fallible and officers are chosen from the culture, right? So you're going to have bad actors mixed in with people who wanted to be cops for the right reasons. You know what I mean? You have people who just, you know what? I love people. I love protecting people. And so I wanted to be an officer for that reason. The problem is officers. The chant that has been said in rally after rally that I've attended, no good cops in a racist system. What that means is that if you want to be considered a good cop, then you have to be willing to not only take on criminals in the street, not only rescue cats from trees, help old ladies across the street, run into burning buildings and sacrifice your life that way, get into gunfights with bank robbers, and do whatever else, cops do. That's heroic. But you also have to be willing to be like Commissioner Chapman, which unfortunately, we don't have many examples like her who are willing to use their position and take on the system from the inside. So it's no surprise that people would push back to the point where she's got to resign and it's been politically maneuvered around her to push her out of her office. No surprise there. But we need more people like her. Good God. We could end a lot of this. By this, I mean, the shooting of unarmed black people in the streets. The constant abuse you heard. Isaiah Thomas, who was in here yesterday, who's also a candidate for council, who shared his own testimony about stop and frisk. Really stop and fondle. And said that he could not. Listen to this. This young man who's what? Isaiah's now, I think, 34 years old or so. Who said not one of his friends can say that they were not only stopped and frisked growing up, but officers who went into their underwear and touched them in places they should not be touched. Quote unquote, searching for drugs. There have been enough stories of stop and fondle that ought to make you wonder what else is going on within the department. Some real psychological stuff, man. So, yes, are there cops who don't ever do anything wrong, who keep their nose clean? Probably most. But you are not helping. If you are not willing to put your own career and, yes, indeed, your life on the line for the rest of us who are subject to what she said in her department, and there are many departments that mirror hers that are awash in bias and acts of systemic racism and discriminatory practices and abuse of authority. And don't tell me, well, if I do it, my backup won't come when I get in trouble. Man, Denise will hear she tell you right now, like Super Chicken, you knew the job was dangerous when you took it. Don't come at me with that. Because if you are not afraid of a bank robber with a freaking AR-15 and you got your 9mm Glock with a couple of clips going up against dudes with full body armor and assault weapons, and somehow you know your adrenaline's pumping in and it's like you're not afraid, you're standing behind your car door and you're shooting back, then don't be afraid now. I mean, it is what it is. I know peer pressure is tough. But the system will not change until people who are on the inside stand up like this woman did, to the degree that she's basically been forced out of her job now. Don't tell me how courageous you are if you're not willing to take on your other cop friends, period. Period. Yeah, Rochelle, you're right. Rochelle's a former cop, head of the Guardian Civic League, said more men in law enforcement should be like her. True. True. Grow a pair. I'm just saying. That would fix a lot of it. So shout out to her, Tanya Chapman. I'm going to try to get some folk on from Norfolk to get comment. Man, wouldn't it be great if we can get her? She's speaking out. She ain't got nothing to lose now, so maybe we can get her on. Love to get her here with power for our Live Free campaign. Let me also say this. In other news, while we are all obsessed with the William Barr account of the Mueller report, please don't forget that, you guys. That what we are seeing is the report offered by Trump's handpicked attorney general, who has given us his four-page summary of 2.5 years worth of work by Bob Mueller. Okay. So I don't know how much you can put into that. But while we're obsessed with that, in Texas, a court has basically said it's fine now that, you know, one of the key provisions in Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is gone because Congress has basically wiped out the individual mandate by zeroing it out. So, yeah, there's an individual mandate and there's a penalty still. But guess what? The penalty is $0 and 0 cents. So if you don't have insurance, you'll be penalized nothing. So this judge says, federal judge says, well, you know what? Basically, then I agree. The entire law should be stricken and taken out of effect. Everything. The Trump administration initially resisted that. And say, we're not going to sign on to that because that would just basically throw everything, as everyone has said, into chaos. What would we have if we don't have anything? And that would also throw out the favorite of Republican households who hated Barack Obama. Because all of those people who had pre-existing health conditions, who could not get insurance, found out that that black guy from Kenya or Indonesia, or wherever he was born, or that country, Hawaii. He did do one thing right. He covered your babies, your children who couldn't get health care. People want that. But in a reverse of their original decision, the Trump administration has now signed on and agreed that it should, that the entire law should be wiped away. This was done on the day that he was, quote unquote, exonerated, which he was not, of obstruction. Mueller said, I can't make a decision on that. He just said, I don't see collusion, according to Bob Barr. But again, we don't know because we haven't seen the report. But on the same day that that was released, while we're not looking, see, it's like three card Molly. You know, I used to watch dudes take people's gold chains off the 43 bus in Oakland, the 40, the 82. They'd be on the back with the three cards. Here you go, here you go. Find the Red Queen. Find the Red Queen. Oh, you got it. Oh, you got it. Next thing you know, sleight of hand, when you got all your money thrown in, your gold chain, your bus pass. Oh, you're wrong. Scoop up their little cardboard, put it in their pocket, take all your money, your chain, and jump off at the next stop. It's called sleight of hand. So on Monday, while we were all like, ooh, Mueller report. Over here, they were saying, we're going to actually fight to end all of the health care bill. Take it all away. It's a wrap. That's a dangerous move on their part, by the way, because if you look at the Democratic polling, the number one issue that Democrats have as their top priority and agenda item is health care and protecting it. And in spite of the fact that people think that it was about Trump sweeping out Republicans in 2018 out of the House, most of the polling data says it was really, really, really about health care. So do not take your eye off the ball. Don't get distracted, as Denise would say, by the shiny object. If you value your health care, you ought to be concerned right now. We got to take a quick station identification break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Flood the drummer, not about health care, not about on-street parking, not about toxic schools, but about justice for Jussie. We'll be right back.
WWDB Philadelphia, 860 AM.
You're listening to Mark and Denise in the Morning on 860 AM WWDB, a part of Beasley Media. Mark and Denise in the Morning is a product of Tyler Made Media, LLC.
Right. The people need understanding. The people need on-street parking back. The people need an end to the tax abatement. People need an end to the sugary beverage tax. So give the people what they need. Helping you get what you need this morning is our sponsor, Power. Philadelphians organized to witness, empower, and rebuild. The region's leading faith-based organizing effort. I'm proud to be a part of Power. You should be too. Talk to your imam, your rabbi, your leader in your Quaker meeting, in your Sikh temple, in your Catholic church, in your Protestant church, and ask them, why aren't we a part of Power? And then give them the web address, powerinterfaith.org. It is a real movement, folks. I'm telling you, doing some real organizing work. Right now, because of Power, we're able to speak to good friend, kind of like a, you know, younger brother, Christopher Flood the Drummer Norris. Flood, yerp.
Yerp.
How are we spelling it these days? Y-E-R-P, or are we going with the U?
Y-E-R-P all day.
All day. There you go. Yerp. Yeah, we're going to add that to our Geno Jennings.
It's not official until we get T-shirts, though, with it. Big, big white letters on black on a black shirt. Yerp.
And on the back.
And then on the back, John.
Yeah, and then under John, free Jussie Smollett from that John.
Oh, God, here you go.
Hey, I got a song for Jussie. You want to hear it? Here we go.
Yes.
Where's the music, Dan? The free the political prisoners. Yeah, you got it. All right, we got a song for Jussie. But while he's queuing it up, you can find Flood the drummer and follow him at Tech Book Online, all social media at Flood the drummer. He's drumming for justice, And he actually drums for churches occasionally. I mean, he's like a real drummer, and he's like kind of a metaphorical drummer. He's a drummer. Yeah, that's Christopher Flood. All right, here we go. Check this out. You like
sounds
that?
Like a club hit.
Yeah, it is. It's like the it's like a take off the old song from the 70s, Free All Political Prisoners. You know, free.
The Jesse definitely isn't a political prisoner.
Now he ain't even a prisoner anymore. So explain
this. Well, I don't think he ever should have been a prisoner, but he definitely isn't a political prisoner.
So what happened to Jesse?
So where did we start? From the beginning or
yeah,
just
yesterday? Yeah, yeah, a lot. I mean, I think, you know, people have, there's been so much other news that has kind of overshadowed it. So I don't know that people even realize kind of where it was. We knew he was facing charges and they were throwing the book at him. He was facing a lot of jail time as of last week. So where is his, where is he legally now?
Well, legally, he's free and clear. The case has been thrown out and sealed and he's free to go. You know, as if anything never happened.
That's it?
That's it.
So I read he had to release his bond. He had to fork over the $10,000 and what?
And he had to do 2 hours of community service.
Dang. That's it?
That's it.
Pretty nice.
Yeah. The prosecutor his name is Joe Maggott. I believe it's how you pronounce it, M-A-G-A-T-S. Of course, Kim Fox, who was the elected state prosecutor, recused herself. So state prosecutor Joe Maggott took over. He made the decision to drop the charges. And here's the interesting thing. He believes that Jesse's guilty. He believes that Jesse did it. But he told CBS, quote, "Our priority is violent crimes and the drivers of violence. Jesse Smollett is neither one of those." And he felt that $10,000 in community service was enough to wipe his slate clean. I don't necessarily disagree that those tentaments were appropriate, but I think they should have been, I think it should have been grander. I think he should have to pay back the money that the investigation cost, which was about $150,000 plus interest. Mm. I think he should have done tons more of community service, but I do not think that he should have been in prison. And he was facing 16 felony counts, each which came with, I think, about 3 years. I believe, and I try to be consistent on this, that the prison system should be only for those who absolutely need to be there, mm-hmm. that pose a threat to the community, that are violent and really need to be rehabilitated. And especially for liberals who believe in this mass incarceration, mitigating mass incarceration, it does nothing. The city isn't safer. Nothing is served by having Jesse Smollett in prison. However, to let him off in this manner and to pretend that he did not put the city through an ordeal, that he did not waste taxpayers' resources and the police's time, I think it's inappropriate. I think it sends a wrong message. I think that I think to a lot of people, this is a story of Hollywood privilege, mm-hmm. of celebrity privilege, that he only had to do 18 hours of community service and forfeit his bond, and that's it.
Yeah, it doesn't go well. So, well, it doesn't do well to the image of Chicago, which, you know, many people say, you know, what the reason R. Kelly has been able to do what he's alleged to have done over the last, you know, 10 years or so is because, you know, he got off because of his fame the first time, right? In his first trial. And if he goes to trial again, probably would get off again. I mean, look, you got women who are putting up $100,000 bond to get you out who don't even know you. And mm-hmm. so now here in the same city, you've got Jesse. And again, I'm with you. I don't think he should have gone to jail. But I do think that he should have been made to realize the importance of the act that he did. And with this quote unquote punishment, I mean, you know, if your kid does something at school and acts up and you take them out to get ice cream afterwards, I don't know you're quite sending the right message. You know,
yeah, at the very least, Rev, he should have, the prosecutor should have said, we're going to give you this deal, but you have to admit guilt.
Right.
You can't just pretend, we can't just pretend none of this happened. You can't just walk away, go back to Empire, and the city kind of just has to deal with this and resolve this on its own. This put a lot of people through some things. I mean, this was race, this was sexual orientation, this was class in some way. People thought that, hey, you know, this guy, this had reached the level of the presidency, the presidential candidate. This wasn't just a local Chicago news story, right? This
right.
captivated the world. And now people are just seeing this celebrity walk free. Everybody knows he lied. I haven't talked to anybody who believes him.
Well, right. And I'm just saying, so, and add to this then, so the other part of this is, and that's what I'm saying, I don't know that he fully comprehends what he is. Maybe he does, but, you know, but it's not clear, because this is not just about him. This is not just about Chicago. So when we reported on that story and talked about it here, the kind of trauma that it made all of us relive, you know, so if you are black, if you are gay, if you're black and gay, I mean, just all of the stuff that, you know, that people had to relive in that moment, the fear that you had, that good God, are Trump supporters actually out there now, like literally doing this, like if they could beat up Jesse Smollett. So the kind of fear that it caused people to live in, the anxiety it produced, that, I mean, to me, a part of the community service should have been something like, I don't know, spending time with people who've been impacted by your lie. Just regular people, making him sit through some folk who would just talk to him about, this is what your story made me feel like. Or people who have really been beaten or lost people through these moments, to get him to fully understand, you know, that we all take this serious. I don't know. It just seems like, I don't think he gets it, or the people who let him off, who set the parameters, actually get it.
No, I definitely don't think he gets it. In his face and his body language yesterday was one of, and rightfully so, I guess, of victorious, not of remorse, not of anything that says, you know, I'm blessed that I'm getting off easy, but, you know, I'm pretty shamed by my actions. He had a level of righteous indignation. And I really am, you know, I had a hard time watching Empire last week, and I don't know if I'll watch it this week. And I was a fan of his, but I'm so disgusted by him. And I'm even more disgusted by people who are trying to say, when I wrote my piece yesterday entitled, I Don't Believe Jesse Smollett, Here's Why, people were saying, oh, black people are so hard on other black people. You know, why are you coming at the black man? Where's the solidarity? To me, this isn't about race. This is about right and wrong. This is about holding another black man accountable, not coming down hard on him. Again, the guilt to me is overwhelming. The evidence against Mr. Smollett is overwhelming. If you read the bail proffer, it's extremely detailed. And Chicago Superintendent Eddie Johnson and Mayor Rahm Emanuel yesterday, when they made their comments, they spoke to the bail proffer. They said, look, the evidence is there. The mayor said the grand jury indicted this kid or this guy on a sliver of the evidence, right? I mean, one of the things that's irrefutable is Jesse called Abel, the younger brother, the 25-year-old, who was his drug dealer, allegedly, and who had served as a stand-in on Empire. He had called him at 12:49 a.m. The morning of the attack. That they have that phone record. He was attacked at 2:03 that day.
Right.
2 hours after the phone call. So, you know, I paid attention to everything that Jesse said, but I also analyzed everything he omitted. And when him and his lawyer yesterday had a chance to give the comments, they acknowledged that the Ansondario brothers, who are Nigerian descent, but they were born in America. They're American citizens. People have been saying Nigerian brothers.
Okay.
They live here.
Yeah.
They're Americans. They acknowledge those were the guys who attacked Jesse. They said that. They believe that. But they did not call for justice. They did not say, we want these brothers arrested and held to the fullest extent of the law. Jesse never said, hey, I'm still a victim here, and the guys who attacked me haven't been brought to justice. They just made all of it disappear.
Mm-hmm.
It's like gaslighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that they didn't call for justice, the fact that they never refuted any of the evidence put forth by the prosecution shows me that this guy is guilty.
Well, he's guilty
of sin.
So here's a, I agree with you. I don't think that, I think just kind of the evidence just seems to point in that direction, unless there's like something we don't know that would come out in some kind of trial. But it just, you know, he looks like, you know, he set this whole thing up. It has not worked the way he wanted. He's lost his job and will probably be blackballed from, you know, Hollywood for a very long time. Because unlike white actors like him who do this, Hollywood's less forgiving for black actors.
Mm-hmm.
But here's something else I wanted to ask you about, because this has been a part that's troubled me. The response of Mayor Chicago Rahm Emanuel, who went off on Jussie Smollett. I mean, they called his press conference. I didn't see the press conference. I've only seen excerpts of it. But they said it was a fiery press conference, and he said it's a whitewashing of justice, and he's standing there alongside the commissioner of the police department, right, and demanding justice. But I'm thinking, Flood, when Officer Van Dyke was convicted of shooting Laquan McDonald 18 times, I don't remember him being so fiery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember him being so angry and outraged about the court and the jury's decision. The sentencing, I should say, when he got off with the very light sentence that most of us viewed as a slap on the wrist for what he did to Laquan McDonald, given what he was facing. I mean, he kind of got the Paul Manafort deal, but I don't remember Rahm going off. He was kind of like, yeah, you know, got to respect the courts.
Yeah, I mean, I would be lying if I say I wasn't thinking that as I watched this press conference, particularly the line when he said, we can't have one system of justice for one type of people and another system of justice for the other type of people.
Huh?
And I kind of looked around and go, huh?
Huh?
I think, is everybody gaslighting this? Because, like, none of this makes any sense. Like, you covered up a shooting for a cop that we know of. No telling how many other shootings you've covered up. But you covered up this shooting until after the election.
Right.
There was no righteous indignation from you.
No.
When the video became public. Nothing. I mean, and all of the, when they found the black site in Chicago where police were taking people to brutalize them.
Yeah.
Nothing from Rahm Emanuel.
No.
But this guy
gets
under your skin?
Yeah, also, I'm telling you.
And the same thing from the superintendent.
Yeah.
They both, particularly the superintendent, they have taken it so personal. They feel like they were personally hurt by this.
You know, that's the part that just gets me. I'm like, seriously, come on, man. I mean, where's the consistency here? I mean, this is one of those cases where, honestly, given what he knows is his own background and how he has dealt with police type issues like this, it would have been far better for him just to simply just say, well, you know what? I know a lot of people are going to disagree, but it is what it is. And that's why we have people in those positions. And so, you know, just move on, because you know people are going to call you on your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so.
I wouldn't be surprised if they called him. I'm sure Twitter and local media called him out, or especially the activist class called him out right after he said those remarks.
He has. Yeah, I'm looking at some of the. He has been called out on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are they saying?
People are saying that. Well, in fact, let me just show you here on our own social media this morning. Lamar says, "Chicago police, go have several seats somewhere and get over it. We're used to seeing police get charges dropped for things that they are clearly guilty on, and no one from the police department or mayor's office asking for federal investigations."
Mm-hmm.
Regina says, "Rahm needs to sit down somewhere." Yeah, and again, even on, you know, the criticism out there as well, I just closed out the tab that had the story, was quickly bringing up, you know, his kind of tepid, lukewarm, you know, reaction to, you know, the sentencing of Van Dyke. I mean, if anything should have made you go off and cause a blood vessel to burst, it would be that. I mean, because again, look, let's put it in categories. If Jussie Smollett, what he did, gets you there at a 10, then what Van Dyke did should have you at 100. But you're at a 3 with Van Dyke and a 10 with Jussie. There's something wrong with that.
And why do you think that is?
Race. And and not just that.
Doesn't Rahm identify as black?
Black what?
What do you mean?
What black?
He's a black man. He's not white.
He's blackish. I don't know what he identifies with. But I do think there's this, because again, so the story I was talking about before you called in, I don't know if you heard it, was the case in Norfolk, Virginia, where the police chief, who was African-American female, who took on the culture of bias and systemic racism within her own department, was basically forced to resign, you know, and that, you know, that again, there is that's for politicians, it is the third rail. So you never, ever, 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 ever criticize the police, even when they're guilty of sin. But Jussie Smollett is an easy target. And I say, look, if you're not going to, you know, if you're going to bite your tongue on this one, then don't say anything about that. But don't be so hypocritical, because it's too easy to call out.
Well, I think he's auditioning for his new role in punditry.
Oh, well, I thought you were going to say he's going to take on Jussie's role on Empire.
No, it was because, you know, look, Rahm Emanuel was on CNN last night. I don't know if you saw that. He was on there with Butch Blitzer. Uh-huh. And he called the decision, quote, an abomination.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, he's really
an abomination.
He's taking it there. He said this is an abomination.
Dude.
My sense of justice.
You're the mayor of the dirtiest police force. And I'm saying that from Philly.
Right.
I'm saying that from Philly. You guys have a black site. You're like some special ops in Iraq or Afghanistan. You take people off the grid and they never seen again. And you were saying this is an abomination? Oh, Lord. Rahm Emanuel.
It's laughable.
It is. If it wasn't so serious, it would be. All right. Well, Flood, man, that's all the time I got. What else you got going on this week? Where can people find you and what should they be looking for?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Flood the Drummer. If you are an iPhone, iPad user, you can subscribe to Techbook Online, or I should say favorite Techbook Online. And here's I'm saying this first on your air this week, along with my best friend Richard Taylor in Chicago. We're launching a new pro wrestling podcast called Coming to the Ring.
What?
So I'll be diversifying the types of things I talk about in the public sphere now. And maybe we'll have you on to talk about the movie.
I want to review it. And so now, first of all, you're going to do a wrestling pro podcast. You got to say it right. It's wrestling.
Wrestling.
Wrestling. Yeah. Flood's got a wrestling podcast. Oh, my God.
I'm finally embracing the fandom and putting it out there. But we're going to look at a lot of the controversial storylines and news in the business through a social political lens. And just real quick, in 60 seconds, the main storyline that WWE has right now is about Kofi Kingston, who's a black wrestler, trying to get the WWE championship. And Vince McMahon, of course, is the big boss, and he keeps screwing him over, putting every obstacle in his way. They're playing up the race angle because Kofi is telling Vince, a guy like me has never been good enough to be a champion in your company. You only have guys like me stay here. And it's always been a long-standing criticism of WWE that they've never had a black WWE champion. And that the stereotypes that they give black wrestlers play into the caricatures and archetypes that have been very hurtful. So there's a lot to talk about in the wrestling business as it relates to race, politics, justice. So it won't be strictly wrestling. It'll be wrestling through a lens of a social political context.
And you could talk about it all through there. So listen, Flood, we got to get you a song. Ike Raw has given us a new song. It's going to debut on Friday. So we got to get you a song for next week. All right.
Got you.
All right. Talk to you, Flood.
Yes, sir.
All right. Yerp.
Yerp.
All right. That's Flood, the drummer, folks. Wow. Yeah, it's an important story for so many reasons. I mean, on the one hand, you could say it's Jussie Smollett. It's just entertainment. Who cares? But it cuts across so many issues. And he stirred up so many things in all of us. And I don't know if he gets it still. You know, you think about all the, like, people like my mom, 80. Don't tell her I said this, you all. 88 years old, 87, 88 years old. Got to do the math. But grew up in Arkansas, Jim Crow, the terror of all that, that she's never forgotten, even though she grew, became an adult in California. That stuff didn't go away. When a kid comes out talking about, I got beaten up because I'm black by MAGA hats and because he's gay. I mean, dude, you like cut into multiple communities with that crap. And I'm not saying you should go to jail, but you should get more than $10,000 in 2 hours of community service. You should need to go to like some kind of victims counseling session to have to hear real stories so you can understand what you did, not get to go back and act again. That's Jussie Smollett if you need him. He's out. Well, right now, folks, we want to talk about something that's also near and dear. Have in studio with us right now, I think we're supposed to be getting a couple other people as well, but right now we have one of the persons representing Neighbors Against the Gas Plants, former Deputy Health Commissioner Dr. Walter Sue. Did I say that right?
You did. Thank you.
Great, great. All right, you put right into the microphone there. Doc, good morning to you.
Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, and I think I'm not sure if we're waiting on a couple other people. I think
one other person's supposed to come.
Okay, great. So waiting on one other person, and when they get here, we'll add them in the conversation. But so, Doc, I mean, the name sounds very self-explanatory, but tell us about Neighbors Against the Gas Plants. What does it do? And, you know, what do you guys hope to accomplish?
Well, this is really started by groups of neighbors who live in the Germantown, East Falls, and Nicetown area of Philadelphia. And we learned that they're building a gas plant to help power the regional rail lines on their property on Wissahickon near Roberts Avenue. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, a large number of people in Nicetown had no idea that they're going to do this. We know that the emissions from this gas plant is going to actually waft over the Nicetown, Germantown, and East Falls area and out toward the River Wards. And we think actually at a time when we're talking about climate change issues and mm-hmm. at a time when the asthma rates in Nicetown are very high, that this was actually not the best idea. We know that the regional rails run right now, every day, mm-hmm. without having to have a gas plant. SEPTA says this is going to be a backup gas plant in case things break down. But in fact, if you look at their application, it's their intention, I believe, to run it 365 days a year, 7 days a week. So we think actually that they're using this as a way of powering the regional rails unnecessarily, and it's actually going to disproportionately affect the people in parts of North Philadelphia.
So Roberts and Wissahickon, that I know exactly where that is. That's is that over near Fox, off of Route 1?
Yeah, off Route 1. It's
by the Kroc Center.
Right near the right across from the Kroc Center, exactly right.
Really? Yeah. So now this is so one of the things I continue to I've been saying this a lot and because it's amazing to me. And I think it's a good thing, but when Democrats were polled about recently about the most important thing for them going into the 2020 election, I don't know if you saw this number. Number one issue was health care. No surprise there. But the number two issue right behind health care and not that far behind it was the climate. Mm. And that it is actually on the minds very much so, at least of Democratic voters. And I got to believe Republicans as well, because, I mean, people look, storms are not discriminating. These, you know, these super powerful storms that we've not witnessed before. So how does all that play into to what's going on with, you know, pushing back on this plant?
Well, the whole point about this climate change debate is that everybody across the world has to do their part in trying to reduce or stop burning fossil fuels. That's the report that came out from the IPCC, which is this Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a UN report, says that we have about 12 years mm-hmm. to get this right. which is not a whole lot of time if you think about it. So if you build a gas plant that's going to have a lifespan of 25 years, let's say, mm-hmm. you're basically making decisions today that will have impacts on the future of this planet 25 years from now. So we believe, actually, that we have to do something right now and not implement things that we may live to regret, 20 years down the line.
Mm-hmm.
We have an opportunity right here in Philadelphia to say this is not the best idea to run a gas plant at a time when we know that we should be transitioning over to renewable energy, like mm-hmm. wind and solar and other geothermal, things like that.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. So those who are putting this gas plant, is this a SEPTA plant?
This is a SEPTA plant.
Right. So if SEPTA says, well, look, all right, fine. You don't want the gas plant. We don't have any other alternatives. Is that true?
Well, they're running them now. They're running it off the electricity that comes from PECO. Mm-hmm. And we think that they should continue doing that. And PECO has an obligation to start transitioning their sources of energy to ones that are not so polluting. So that's one of our efforts right now.
So let's say a worst case scenario. You put this gas plant in. I mean, what's the worst that could happen to the environment around that area, around East Falls, long-term health effects? Is there anything that could actually happen? Could it blow up? I mean, just what are some of the things that people aren't thinking about? Because a lot of times, especially, let me just tell you, in black and brown communities, you have become so desensitized to being the dumping ground of these things that when they go up, nobody even asks what it is.
Right. Well, right now, people don't realize about it, but if they actually power this plant up, you're going to actually start noticing particulate matter, volatile organic compounds, carbon monoxide, nitrogen dioxide, and sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere. And we're not talking about pounds of this stuff. We're talking about tons, several tons, which they said in their air permit would be allowed to be emitted into their communities if they allow this plant to operate. And I think that actually, from a public health perspective, that's not the best decision for us to be making at a time when we have the technology to use clean, renewable energy.
So the group that you are here representing today, are you just speaking for the group? Are you also a part of Neighbors Against the Gas Plant?
Well, I'm part of Neighbors Against the Gas Plant. Mm-hmm. It's a grassroots group mm-hmm. that's trying to say this is not the best decision. And on the opposite side, I should say, is SEPTA, who wants to operate this gas plant, and the city of Philadelphia, who were the ones who issued the permit to allow them to operate the gas plant. And so you have this sort of ragtag grassroots group trying to fight against two of the biggest forces in Philadelphia, the city itself and SEPTA, who have unlimited resources to fight us. So it's a real David versus Goliath discussion. But I think, we're on the right side on this issue. We want to try to protect the communities, and we're trying to do something about the planet in the future. And the combination suggests that we need to find another way of energizing the regional rail lines, and we have it right now, which is we're using PECO.
So who is the council member for that district?
Cindy Bass.
So Council Member Bass. So I'm going to reach out to her because I want to get her thoughts on this, because this obviously cannot go in a city that has such strong councilmatic prerogative.
Yeah. Right? Well, Cindy belatedly has stated that she is opposed to this gas plant, and she's spoken about this. She's written letters to the mayor and other people about this issue. The problem is that it may be too little too late at this point. So...
Well, I don't understand that, because, I mean, again, this is a city that has, if council members want to shut something down, I've seen them shut things down in the 11th hour before.
Well, there's, she'll tell you that the zoning for the area where they're located is something called by right, which means that SEPTA has the right to do whatever they want on the property that they have there. And
whoa. wait a minute, excuse me. So SEPTA has the right to do whatever they want in our city?
If on the property that they own.
But it's our city.
It is our city, and we do have influence, and we can influence the SEPTA board, perhaps. But the SEPTA board gave blessings to build this gas plant, and it is the SEPTA board who presumably has said this is a done deal, and we're going to go ahead and do this.
So Raphael Online says, PECO has been very slow in adapting renewable energy sources for Philly. We need to talk about how this company is behind the curve. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a big, big issue. There's a group that's actually affiliated with Power, Equate.
We've had them on before.
You have?
Yeah.
And they have been really at the front line on confronting PECO and saying you need to do more about using renewable energy.
This is, listen, I tell you, you know, when you think about the amounts, the high rates of asthma in Black communities and Black neighborhoods, and the place where you're talking about right now, this is, you're talking about right on at that part of East Falls is very close to the North Philly side.
That's right.
Right. And so all that stuff is going to blow right over into there. It's not going to blow the other direction. And when you think about all of the, you know, just the rates of asthma and all the other associated diseases that people are suffering with, I'm just surprised that the city would not push harder against something like this.
Well, that's what's surprising to us too, because it was actually the health department division called Air Management Services that approved this permit, and they did not consider the asthma rates, even though they collect statistics around that, of the people who live in Nicetown. They did not consider maybe the health status or look for what the health status of people in that area was before they approved the permit. And we think that's actually not using all the data available to you in making a wise decision.
So we're talking to Dr. Walter Sue, MD, and currently he's an adjunct fellow at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. And in a past life, you actually served as health commissioner of Philadelphia from 2000 to 2002, so you know of what you speak. So what would you have done if this came across your desk back in 2000 to 2002?
Well, that's a very good question. I think, you know, it's very easy to listen to your own division and say, oh, we're going to approve this plan. And one of the things I've learned now that I'm out of the position is that there's another side to every story, and you need to hear that other side before you make approvals for something like a major capital project like this that has potential to pollute the community that we're in. So I think what I would like to have said I would have done is I would like to hear what if there's any opposition and what they have to say about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, so Doc, I'm going to share the information again. It's Neighbors Against the Gas Plants, and I'm on their Facebook page right now. In fact, I just liked it. You should do the same, so you can follow them. You can look for it at No SEPTA Gas Plant. Hit that in Facebook, and that should take you right to it, at No SEPTA Gas Plant. I'm not sure if you can use that same handle for Twitter, but I'm sure you probably can. You can message them and find out ways in which you can also become a part of this movement. Listen, I mean, you know, we have been talking about this for the longest, and it came to a head on Sunday at our candidates forum, this idea that the land belongs to the people of the city. Why is that so hard for people to understand? It's our city. It's our land. But if you don't make people accountable, people won't be accountable.
That's right. And we need to make people accountable.
All right. Well, Dr. Sue, thank you so much for coming in. And again, folks, check them out. Neighbors Against the Gas Plants. I like it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mark.
Yep. Give my best to the rest of the group. And who knows? You may see me at one of those meetings one day. You're going to look up and like, really? I'm like, no, I'm just here. I want to be a part of this. So. All right. Listen, folks, we are almost done this morning, and I'm getting your feedback here on social media and through text messages. Folks are saying, Kenny doesn't need to get reelected. Ooh, really? Daryl Clark needs to go, man. Speaking of Darryl Clark, I don't think I'll go into that story, but there's a post out there. Oh, boy, it's not good. I'm just going to leave that. I don't have enough time on this show to even unpack it. I was tagged in the post. Hey, raised some real questions about how the language we use. But we're waiting on Hannibal Lacombe. Thank you, Sheila Booker. Soon as I said that, the phone starts ringing, and guess who it is? It's Hannibal. Glad to see Sherry Cohen listening this morning. She's running for council. She's been in. Saw Asa Khalif earlier. He's running for council. He's listening. Saw Edwin Santana. He's running for council. He's listening. Got a lot of... Let me tell you, you council candidates are making my life miserable. No offense to you, but you're making my life miserable. Only 7 seats and like 15 to 16 people that I just love, that I like to see in those seats. It's like the most vicious game of musical chairs ever. You know, the good news is we've got some really strong people to choose from. I'm happy about that. Not happy that some of the folk that I love and would like to see in those positions are going to probably not make it because, again, there's just not enough seats. Everybody you like can't get in one. It's the nature of politics, but I'm glad that a number of you are running, and I hope you get in and take that activist organizing spirit with you and shake up this crap in City Hall. You know, shake it up. Got gas plants going up when there's all kind of alternative force, alternative energy sources out there. Come on now. We're better than that. We're better than that. We should be. As promised on yesterday, he is with us on today. Trumpeteer par excellent. Excellent. He is composer in residence. Now, you know you're bad when the Philadelphia Orchestra says, we're going to make you composer in residence. And you just go out and create incredible things and we'll just play the music that you write. That's what he does. And if you ever have him in your church on a Sunday, for any of you preachers out there listening or music directors, you better ask him to come up and play before service is over. Preachers, let me give you a hint. Have him play before you preach and you only have to preach. I mean, Dan, I'm not kidding. By the time he finishes, it's like, call for the benediction. We're going on. That's how he rolls. He did an incredibly moving tribute to the fallen members of the Emmanuel Nine, which debuted at Mother Bethel a couple of years ago. We were honored to host it. And now he's got a new piece that's out, Healing Tones, which is, I believe, his last piece with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Brother Hannibal Lacombe, good morning to you.
Good morning, brother.
How you doing? How are you?
Peace to you, brother.
Peace to you as well.
It's great to hear your voice.
Thank you, Brother Hannibal. And I didn't even say that one of the things I just love about what you do is you always take your music and what you do into the prisons. Always. What's that about? Yeah. Why do you do it?
Well, had it not been for the guidance of my brilliant mother and my master musician, teacher, I could very well be behind those bars. That's the script I think America's most comfortable with for a brother to be incarcerated or be in a grave. So I always let the brothers know that there's no difference between them or myself. It's just that I have, in some cases, a little bit more luck of the draw with having someone constantly letting you know that they love me and they care for my life. Many of the brothers I meet, they never had that. So how can a person growing up without love expect to be loving?
Wow, that's absolutely moving. Well, you are according to what I've read online, am I correct that this is your last piece with this completes your tenure as composer in residence with the Philadelphia Orchestra?
Yes, this will be the last major work for my 3-year residency, but we are already planning performances of some of my other works in 2020 and 2021.
All right. So this is so you'll be presenting starting on tomorrow night at the Kimmel Center at Verizon Hall, Hannibal's Healing Tones. I mean, the folk, listen, it's going to include my son's college, Morgan State University's choir. It'll be as an artistic director, the incredible Dr. J. Donald Dumpson. You got incredible soloists, soprano, mezzo-soprano, tenor. The conductor is Yannick. I mean, come on now. Hannibal, you're just cutting up. Talk about it.
This piece is in honor of my great-grandmother, who was a Cherokee shaman, was a member of the Trail of Tears. And I've always wanted to make a commentary on what was done to the Native Americans in the Americas, South, Central, and North. And so finally in this piece, I get a chance to do that, and I'm so privileged and so honored to be able to make this kind of statement about a people that are almost forgotten about unless mentioned in the context of gambling casinos. But these are very noble people, and what they had to offer the world is what would save us today from the social morass we're in presently.
So I read that too when I was reading kind of the highlight of the show, that like one of my ancestors, the grandmother you're talking about was a part of the Trail of Tears. And has that story been passed on to your family down the years? How's that impacted you, just even knowing that history?
Fortunately, there were always those in my family that was curious about the beginning. Mm-hmm. And at age 13, the spirit of my great-grandmother came to me and has since been my spirit guide. Mm-hmm. She never speaks verbally, only with her hands, her expressions, and in fact gave me the name Lokumbe, which means the spirit that lives in the wind. The name doesn't exist except when she gave it to me and explained to me by hand gestures what it meant.
So what is the, first of all, let me just say, Jay Broadnax, pastor of Mount Pisgah and president of Black Clergy, he's listening to the show on Facebook Live. He posted, that man will bless your church. Shout out to Brother Hannibal. And I have to agree with that. But every one of your, I can't even call it a show. I mean, that's not the right, see, what the orchestra does, there's no language for what you do. It is really more of an experience. It's a spiritual journey. And every time I see something that you do, it is something where I walk away and I just need to kind of go decompress somewhere. So what when people go tomorrow night or Friday or Saturday to Hannibal's Healing Tones, what will they experience? What do you hope they'll walk away with?
That they are reminded they're human beings and that we should care whether someone lives or dies. We should care how others are. Move in this life and how their welfare, and that it ultimately we're all on this round, beautiful globe called Earth together. And like Dr. King said, no man is free till all men are free.
Wow. All right. Tickets are still available, right?
I think so. I would hate to say wrong, but
well, I don't think the Kimmel would have set me up like
everyone
that.
Everyone in the world could hear this piece.
Yeah. All right. Good. So, all right. Well, listen, I am. I'll be there, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise on Thursday. that's my intention to be there with you on Thursday night to see it for the first time. I'm I'm going in with kind of, again, like a blank slate in my mind, because I found that's the best way to deal with you, to just wipe away expectations and just kind of let the experience take you wherever it takes you. But I'm serious. I'm absolutely excited about it. And I'm glad to know that the collaboration does not end. But I do have to ask you one more question. Now, well, two. One is, when are you coming back to Mother Bethel on a Sunday morning with the trumpet? This Sunday would be a good one since you're in town. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to have to make it this Sunday. And
yeah, okay.
Well, and I always look forward to that. Someone asked me, what is it? What is the name for what I do? I call them ceremonies. Mm. And so these pieces are ceremonial pieces that came from my great-grandmother. These are ceremonies that she gives me to give to the people.
I like that.
And it's worth all that I had to suffer to make sure the mission was complete.
All right. Well, so the second question then is, when do you bring on another one of these ceremonies to Mother Bethel?
Oh, we have to. There are a lot of ideas I have for that, and I thank you for the offer to play in such a sacred place. I always remember the day when it began raining during the Walk of Love, mm-hmm. right before the Walk of Love, and how the skies cleared.
Yeah,
I'll never forget that, walking up to the church. I saw that as a sign from the ancestors that they were proud of us and what we continued. It was a very special feeling. I thank you for that. I thank you for having the faith in the work to have it done there.
All right. Well, listen, Hannibal, I appreciate it. And if you're looking for tickets, you can go to Philadelphia Orchestra's website, and there you will find the concert, Hannibal Healing Tones. It will link you to where you can buy tickets. It's tomorrow night, the first showing, and I believe it's for three nights at Verizon Hall at the Kimmel Center, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's 7:30 tomorrow night. Check the website for the other times as well. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. And if you go Thursday night, give us a call on Friday to the show and share your thoughts and reflections on the ceremony that you're going to see. Hannibal, thank you, brother. Get ready for the show.
Many blessings.
Same
yes,
to you.
Sir.
Peace. All right. To you. Peace.
Thank you.
All right. That's Hannibal Lokumbe. Telling you. Check him out on YouTube. Some of his old stuff. Been around for a while, but I'm telling you, a real blessing. So listen, fortunately, folks, before we get out of here today, we have the other part of the group, People Against the Gas Plant. I'm looking at Dan. He typed me. They're not against the gas light. They don't mind gas lights, I don't think. Well, let's give the mics on. Do you guys mind gas lights?
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
Basically, if you want to get into gas...
All right.
It's a global warmer, so we need to transition to renewable energy, but we are particularly opposed to this one gas plant that SEPTA wants to put in Nicetown. Actually, they've built it, but haven't turned it on yet.
All right. Well, so Dr. Sue just left, and he laid out some of the details. So let me just introduce you. Lynn Robinson is the director of Neighbors Against the Gas Plants. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also we have with us Wanda Walker. Wanda, you are the owner of Reed Ready Daycare.
Yes, I am.
How close is that to this gas plant?
Close enough. With the ratios of asthma 1-4,
yeah.
And that's something that we really deal with younger children. And wind does exist. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where it's still in the Germantown, Knightstown area.
Right.
And so when the winds blow and that goes on, that's just one more straw.
Right.
Or one more problem in our community.
So this plant is going to be very near where our babies are.
Yes.
That's all right. Okay. So Lynn.
Yes.
This group, first of all, can anybody join the group?
Yes.
I don't live too far from there. Can I join?
Absolutely. Everybody's welcome.
Everybody should join because it's about the future.
All right. Excellent. So let's get some of the basics out of the way. When and where does the group meet?
We meet, depending on the circumstances, between once a month and once a week, depending on what's going on, at the Germantown Espresso Bar, which is on Maplewood Mall. Mm-hmm. So we put our meeting times on Facebook, and I send emails out to people that are interested.
All right. And the Facebook page I shared earlier, that is the they can actually just find the group on Facebook, right?
Yes. Neighbors Against the Gas Plants. Be sure to add the S to plant, because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't find it if they don't put that in.
Okay. Excellent. So, so Wanda.
Yes.
Small business owner.
Yes, I am.
First of all, God bless you. You
yes.
take, you have a daycare?
Yes, I love children.
Oh,
they are our future.
They are. Yes, they are. And I love them. I have had four. But I'm just saying, I would just see our like daycare workers, and I just like want to just give them a hug. Like, I don't know how you do it. How do you do it?
Thank you. Children make it worthwhile.
Oh, everybody has a calling. But yeah. So did Lynn's group, or how were you kind of brought into this when you were made aware that SEPTA is about to open up and fire up this gas plant that we'd be breathing out all the nasty stuff that Dr. Sue was telling us about 20 minutes ago over the heads of these small children daily?
Well, I was walking outside 5015 where my daycare is, mm-hmm. and Lynn with another lady was passing out brochures about the information, and I actually started up a conversation. And I was very interested because I have a daycare. So she said, would you like to come to a meeting? And from there, it's been a wonderful friendship and mm-hmm. a journey ever since. I think I've made every single hearing except for two.
Wow.
Sometimes we have circumstances that come up in daycare world, and I can't always be there, but I've been very consistent. Lynn has been extremely consistent. We understand that, you know, it's already built and some things have been done, but we want to be an example to other communities so other people know what's coming and that they know that they can fight, you know. And I think that we also want to get out to the community that everyone needs to join and everyone needs to start paying attention to what's going on in the community, because if you don't, these are the things that mm-hmm. Other people let happen. And at the end of the day, we have to say, we have to be our own advocates. So that means people have to come out to meetings, they have to come out to hearings, they have to vote, they have to show up to, you know, parent-teacher meetings, mm-hmm. anything or everywhere where you would be able to get this information before it's too late.
So, all right, so before it's too late, we're running out of time for the show today, but Lynn, we understand that Council Member Cindy Bass, whose district this is now on board with you saying no to the gas plant. But it, you know, Dr. Sue said, well, it seemed, you know, it may be a little bit too little too late. Is it too late or can this still be stopped?
That's a great question. There are two hearings remaining, April 2nd and April 16th. Mm-hmm. On the 16th, we do expect a verdict at the Licenses and Inspection Review Board at 1515 Arch Street. I really hope that some of the listeners will come out on the 2nd at 10 a.m. to 1515 Arch, and also on the 16th, because, you know, when the public shows up, the L&I Review Board realizes there's public interest. But as far as Cindy Bass, she has written an op-ed last June. She wrote a letter to Licenses and Inspection. She came to one of the hearings and spoke. However, recently, unfortunately, it seems that she has shut down.
All right. Well, speaking of shut down, Dan, cue that music, and he's about to shut us down. Barry Reisman's about to push us off the air. But before we go, let me thank all of our guests for today. And you can learn more about them at just look for at No SEPTA Gas Plant. That will also take you to their Facebook page, Neighbors Against the Gas Plants. Also posted the information for readreadyacademy.com, which is Wanda's business. Check them out if you have kids who need daycare. And listen, folks, that's all we have for today. Lord willing, the creek don't rise. We'll be back on tomorrow. And that's it. Peace.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're so welcome. Much.